I'm in New York City, so it would stand to reason that I would try to find a New York legend. And I did. A senior writer for The Athletic, New York, Frank Isola, is my guest. Frank, it's been a minute or two. It's great to have you back on. How are you, Frank?
Jim Rome taking New York by storm. And if you're calling me a New York legend, you must have gotten way down that list. Like a New York City phone book. You must be on the final page, letter Z.
My man, I did not stutter. I said New York legend. Frank Isola is my guest. I mean that sincerely. Frank, great to have you on. Thanks so much for doing this. You've got a piece up right now on The Athletic about Joakim Noah, who was released by the Knicks on Saturday. Given that Phil Jackson signed him to a four-year, $72 million deal back in 2016, it would seem a little surprising that they're cutting this guy loose after two seasons. But given where he was physically at the time that he was signed, how surprising, Frank, is it really?
No, it really isn't. If you remember, Jim, if you go back to January, Joakim Noah and Jeff Hornacek, the former Knick coach, got into some type of altercation at a practice in Denver, and they sent Joakim Noah home, and you never saw him around the Knicks again. So it was just a matter of time before something like this was going to happen. And Joakim Noah had a good run in Chicago, just like Phil Jackson had a great run in Chicago. But the New York years are not going to look back fondly on. And Joakim Noah just wasn't the same player physically, was breaking down. And I think the game is kind of moving away from the type of basketball that he plays. Not that you can't use a guy that can defend and pass and rebound the ball, but you need shooting on the court, and it was not a good signing by Phil. No one was going to give Joakim Noah the $70 million that the Knicks did. I think Phil was looking to make a big splash, and he ended up jumping into the shallow end of the pool, so to speak.
Frank Isola joining us on the program. One more thing about Phil. In July of 2016, Phil said that he bumped into Noah on the street and that Noah wanted him to do a pull-up on his arm to prove that it was healthy. What did you make of that story at that time?
I think that was just Phil being a little eccentric and like, you know, and playing a little game with the Knicks. So I don't doubt that they might have run into each other at some point in Manhattan, but I doubt that story. And I think it was Phil's way of saying that the shoulder is fine, and that actually wasn't the case. And Joakim Noah did not play in a lot of games for the Knicks. I think it was something like 40-plus games that he played. He wasn't healthy. He had the drug suspension, and he just could not find his way with the team. And it's too bad, because I think Noah, you know, deep down, I feel like he was sincere. He was hoping to come to New York and make things work, but it just wasn't the right signing, and it really hurt the Knicks for a couple of years.
Well, I'm in New York City, so we're talking Knicks basketball right now. Frank Isola is my guest. So you've pointed out that the Knicks, they missed on LeBron James in 2010. They rushed in to sign Amari Stoudemire in 2016. When they missed on Kevin Durant, they went after Noah. I mean, is it a coincidence, or frankly, is it a pattern?
Well, I think they're always looking for that big fish. And when they didn't get LeBron back in 2010, if you remember, they shifted their focus after they signed Amari to getting Carmelo Anthony. It would have been best for the Knicks if Carmelo had just waited until the end of the season and just signed him outright, because this way the Knicks could have kept some of the assets that they had, some of the players, some of the draft picks, and that could have helped them in the long run. That's why this summer is going to be very interesting, with Kyrie Irving already coming out saying what he's going to say, and we know a lot of things can happen between now and July. But if you assume that Kyrie is off the board, really the big fish for the Knicks, and it's been this way for a while, is Kevin Durant. I know you talk to a lot of people around the NBA that know Kevin Durant. A lot of people think that he has a wandering eye and that he is looking to move, and New York has been mentioned as a possible destination. I was out in Oakland 2 weeks ago, and the people in that organization, they're of the belief, why would you leave? You have everything here that you would need, and it really has become one of the preferred destinations for any free agent, just because the business opportunities off the court, you know, the beautiful weather up there. Obviously, now they have a winning tradition. So a lot of people believe that Kevin Durant is the kind of guy that could change his mind 100 times between now and July 1st. So I don't think there's any way of knowing, but I would say as of right now, here we are in the, you know, hours before the season begins, I would think that, believe it or not, I think the Knicks have a chance.
Huh, interesting. But what if, Frank, they do not get either one of them? If they don't get Durant, if they don't get Kyrie Irving, what advice would you give them for the next step? In other words, is getting something better than nothing, or does overpaying for that something actually cause far more damage?
Well, see, the Knicks are being pretty slick, and they're being smart with their message. It's patience, right? So they could say patience, and yet if they can get Kevin Durant, they're going to throw patience out the window, and they're going to sign Kevin Durant. But if they don't get him, if I were them, I would stick with that plan. Because you're going to do something like, let's say, for example, you can throw a max deal at a guy like Jimmy Butler. Is that really the way you want to go? He's 29 years old. he's not in that same class as Kawhi Leonard, certainly not LeBron James and Kevin Durant. If I were the Knicks, you know, don't just spend the money to spend it. And that kind of happened to them 2 years ago with Joe Cano. I think a lot of these teams around the NBA make that same mistake where they feel like, well, we got the money, we have to spend it. Sometimes you're better off, you know, not throwing the big dollars at the guy who you think is a risk. So you have Porzingis. You hope that Kevin Knox turns into something. Same thing with Frank Ntilikina. Remember, the Knicks have their own first-round pick. Chances are they're going to be in the lottery. So, you know, they're selling this idea of patience. And I think if they don't get Kevin Durant, I think they would be smart to kind of follow their own slogan and not, you know, try to hit the home run just yet.
Frank, I saw my guest. All right, you mentioned some of their assets. If you're the Knicks, what is your pitch to Kevin Durant?
That's a great call. It's, you know, you're going to hope that at some point Porzingis comes back. So let's assume that he comes back by March and he plays, kind of like what Paul George did that year, where he almost took the whole year off and came back at least to say that you were out there. So they're going to be selling Porzingis. They're going to be selling Kevin Knox. The idea that, you know what, LeBron James is in L.A., and let's assume that the Warriors win the title. You have just as many titles as LeBron James. You really want to separate yourself from this group of players, really, from over the last 30 years? Come to New York and win. You win here, you'll be remembered forever. You'll get a statue in New York. They won't be talking about how you ran and chased the championship in Oakland. And I think it's something that might entice Kevin Durant, but you know this, Jim. If it doesn't work out in New York, and for a lot of guys, it really hasn't. You know, Carmelo, it worked out to some degree, but for a lot of guys that have come here, think about some of these Hall of Fame guys, just from the coaching standpoint. Lenny Wilkins, Larry Brown, Phil Jackson. Did it work? Did it help or hurt their legacy? And then you look at some of the players over the years, and I'm not so sure it helped their legacy as much as it hurt it coming to New York, because things just didn't work out.
It's such a good point. Frank Isola joining us. He's a senior writer for The Athletic, New York. Frank, you've got this great, great piece up right now on Pat Riley, Tom Thibodeau, and the Jimmy Butler saga. There was a report that Riley was upset with Tibbs blocking a Butler trade to the Heat and let it be known in no uncertain terms. Knowing the two people involved, what was your reaction when you first heard that report?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is Pat Riley telling that story to somebody? Maybe it's getting, like, twisted around a little bit. I find it hard to believe that Pat Riley would say something like this, because I do believe that he has respect for Tom Thibodeau, but we also know this about Pat Riley. He's an intense competitor, and if he probably thought that the deal was close to happening, I could see him getting a bit angry. But what's interesting about the story is, if you go back to, you know, the 90s when the Knicks had that great robbery, I know a lot of people outside of New York and Miami probably didn't like it because it was like a wrestling match. But, you know, it was competitive basketball. It was hard to score. And, you know, one of the assistants on Jeff Van Gundy's staff was Tom Thibodeau. And he saw that whole thing firsthand. And he looks up to Pat Riley. He admires everything that Pat Riley has done. And in a lot of ways, they're connected, because Jeff Van Gundy coached for Pat Riley. That trickles down to Tom Thibodeau. It also includes Stan Van Gundy. During that one playoff series when P.J. Brown and Charlie Ward got in the fight, Jeff and Stan Van Gundy got on a fight on the phone, and, you know, they were cursing at each other. I know that that definitely happened. They were using a few choice words before they finally hung up. So it kind of brought back memories of those great Miami Heat and Knick robberies. You know, for four straight years they met in the playoffs. All four series went the distance. I was lucky enough to be there for all of them. It was intense. And it was a battle, and the crowds got into it. The teams hated each other. It's everything that you love about sports when the two teams don't like each other. It makes it that much better.
I thought it was amazing. It might have been more football than basketball at that time, but I thought it was amazing to see. It was so compelling. It was so physical. It was so aggressive. What about the dynamic between Riley and Van Gundy at that time? What was that like?
Oh, that was pretty intense, because, you know, Jeff obviously looked up to Pat Riley and tried to get the Knicks to do the things that they had done under Pat Riley. You know, Jeff was the assistant under Don Nelson. Don Nelson got it to 56 games, so you're basically going right back to the Pat Riley way, but only with Jeff Van Gundy as the coach. If you remember when Jeff hung on to Alonzo Mourning's leg, that would have been in game 4 of 98. Back then it was a 5-game first-round series. Pat Riley came out the next day, really criticized Jeff, said that he was the one who lost control. So their relationship was frayed, and it kind of got back together after the 99 playoffs, when Allen Houston hit that shot. You know, the ball got knocked out of bounds. If there was television replay back then, go ask Terry Porter. It does look like the ball might have gone off with Charles Sprewell's leg. It's Nick Ball, and without a timeout, it was Charlie Ward that made the pass to Allen Houston. Allen Houston scores that leaner, and then within a week, Jeff Van Gundy received a note from Pat Riley congratulating him and saying, you had a play, meaning you were ready for whatever situation was being thrown at you. And I think that was kind of Pat Riley's way of extending the olive branch. See, I've always been a big Pat Riley guy. I just think that he, they haven't had a, for the last 2 years, it has not been great in Miami. But I've always felt that, he just had a certain way of running an organization, all about winning. And think about, this, Jim. Years ago, Miami was viewed as like a laughingstock. Yes, they had great weather, but everybody looked at it as a vacation place. Then all of a sudden, think about what he did to that franchise, the way he turned it around, and then those years where they had LeBron, they went to four straight finals. So I've always been a big Pat Riley guy, but I like Jeff as well. They're both kind of crazy in a good way.
So, Frank, let me ask you. Frank, I saw him, I guess. Let me ask you about Pat. It's really amazing. About a year ago, we took a family vacation in Italy, and I saw Riley in a restaurant holding shop, and it was like, I mean, he's a movie star still. He's 73. He's done everything there is to do in this game as a player, as a coach, a member of the front office as well. This guy could be so satisfied and walk away right now, but doesn't. What keeps this guy motivated at this age?
You know what I think it is? I think just like players that stick around for a long time and, they need somehow to feed that competitive fire that they have inside of them. And I think that's what it is about Pat Riley. There's always another challenge, just like, need to win, this need to be great. And like you said, it's no longer really about the money, and it's certainly really not so much about the attention, because to Pat Riley's credit, and I always felt this was the problem with Phil Jackson when he came to New York, you got to disappear in the background. You got to become a scout, and you're running the front office. And Pat Riley really never made it about himself once Eric Spoelstra came there, even when they had LeBron James there. And for a while, everybody thought, oh, there'll definitely be a coaching change and Pat will come down from the bench. So even a guy like that, who we think about having this huge ego and the great look that he has and the suits that he wears, he was willing to take a step back. But that doesn't mean that his need to win or his desire to win has diminished at all. And I think that's what keeps him, going.
All right, Frank, last thing. There were two major free agent signings this summer. You with the Athletic and LeBron with the Lakers. What are you most looking forward to watching with LeBron and the Lakers over the course of the year?
I want you to read that story, because I did not write the headline, Jim. I made fun of myself in that one. I would say this about LeBron, and I do laugh, because I think with Laker management, the players and the fans, they talk about LeBron James like he's 27 years old.
Right.
And I have incredible respect for LeBron as a player, but come on. I mean, he's going to be 34 on December 30th. I don't know when it's going to happen. He's a freak. Maybe he'll still be playing at 50. But they do kind of make it seem like, oh, yeah, we'll be all right this year. It'll be next year, and we'll see down the road. Yeah, he played 82 games last year, and the Cleveland Cavaliers won 50. And I get it. He made it back to the finals. But here's the thing. Go look at his games played for his career, minutes played. Then go look at his playoff games played. I think it's 8 more playoff games, and he will have played in the equivalent of 3 extra NBA seasons. He has a lot of mileage on his leg. And the thing that concerns me is it's always been talk about championship. And then he goes to L.A. and it's like, well, he's going to be in this movie. He's going to produce this movie. He's going to meet with Al Pacino. It just seems to be already, I'm not saying he's not, when he steps on the court, he's not going to be competing, but there does maybe seem to be a little too much going on, in my opinion.
Frank Isola, New York legend, a senior writer for The Athletic New York. Frank, are you still beefing with Lil Wayne?
He really came after. I actually felt bad about it. Not that I'm afraid of him, even though people told me I should be. I didn't mean that you can't take Lil Wayne serious. I just meant that you can't take Odell Beckham seriously. Talking about the Giants when he brings his buddy in with him and he's nodding in agreement to everything he said. It was totally. It didn't matter if it was his mother that he brought in. It would look silly. You just couldn't take it seriously.
I mean, by the way, I'm not looking to make stir any pot at all. I mean, that was weird. What was that all about?
I don't know. I guess I didn't realize that they're both from New Orleans, and I guess he's promoting an album. I just think in that type of setting, if you're Odell Beckham and you're going to go up there and you're going to kind of trash Eli Manning, and you got your buddy there nodding his head in agreement to everything he said, it was like watching LeBron's The Shop. He only gets people on the show that agree with him. He needs to get somebody on the show that has a dissenting opinion. He needs Jim Rome on The Shop. You could use a haircut. Go sit with LeBron James.
I could use a haircut. Lil Wayne, I sat with Lil Wayne. I did an interview with him once. He is so compelling, man. He's fascinating.
I heard he knows a lot about sports. You know what, though, Jim? I'm going to tell you this, especially since you're in New York. The fact that he mentioned my New York Italian accent, I always feel with a lot of people that are far removed from New York, I think that they think all Italians on in some way are connected to the mafia. So I think that's in the back of his head.
Got it.
I don't think he went all in on me because I think he's probably thinking maybe he knows Tony Soprano.
Frank Isola, see, New York legend and a senior writer for The Athletic New York. Frank, I had to run you down. I came into town for one day. I had to run you down. I appreciate you, Frank. Thanks so much.
Next time I'll come in the studio.
Love it.